I'm James Swallow, I'm the author of Nemesis and Flight of the Eisenstein and the Blood Angels novels, and you are listening to Shawnhammer.
With episode of 46 of Shawnhammer. Now, it's been a while since I've done this. I do apologize. I wish I had a good excuse, but I don't. I'm a slacker. But I think I've also stated that many, many moons ago. And let's get on with today's podcast. First, let's talk about what I've done in wargaming over the last, I believe, a month. Well, as you can tell, I've done an interview with the author James Swallow from the Black Library. I've got my Malfoy crews, my new ones. I have gotten Colette's box and also the Dreamer box. Put them together, painted a little bit. My wife painted Lord Chompy Bits for me out of the Dreamer box, so she's done more painting than I have. I haven't even been doing any hero clicks, so I've not been doing a lot of gaming, been doing a lot of reading, different Black Library stuff, the new Malifaux Rising Powers book I've been reading, and also the Death Watch role-playing guide, which is pretty cool, and putting together, actually trying to put together a sweet-as-hell Death Watch kill team for kill zones. So here comes my pathetic little beg for pieces. I am looking for Apothecary Pit and Bit, sorry, Heavy Bolter pieces, Dark Angel, Black Templar, Robe pieces, any Chapter, Space Marine, embossed shoulder pads. I have all the Death Watch stuff. I was going to pull apart my old Death Watch kill team and redo them, but I decided not to. They look pretty good. I'll just try newer and better for the next time. So that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm doing with gaming. This weekend I have a big battle royale at a buddy's house. I got 4 to 5 games of Warhammer Fantasy scheduled. It's going to be a pretty busy weekend, but I'm getting all my league games in one weekend, just because scheduling with different people and everything, and I think it'll just work out pretty much. Should be fun, and hopefully it works out well. I will be interviewing the different contestants that I play and going over our army list to actually detail how our armies changed from going from 7th to 8th edition. So that's one of the one things I'm going to work on this weekend. And I got the new White Dwarf, 374, and we're going to take a quick look through this. Not bad issue, the one before this kind of was, and I will go through that one because it was kind of crap. So this new White Dwarf, let's get into it. What do we have to look forward to? Orcs and Goblins, baby. It's going to be the first Warhammer hardcover army book. Inside White Dwarf, it shows us starting off with a great picture of a giant friggin' spider Hodal riding Stegodon type beast for goblins. We have some new Savage Orc Boar boys. They look okay as far as orcs go. I'm not a big orc fan. Savage Orcs coming out. Savage Orc Great Shaman. Warzag. But the one thing they do have coming out for the goblins, which I believe is a new unit period, is the Nasty Skulkers. They kind of remind me of Gutter Runners for goblins. And I know this is anti-climactic, but they're kind of cute. Of course, we have the new Orcs and Goblin book. And we will have the Warhammer Battle Magic Orcs and Goblins. Of course, they'll probably have the Orc spells and the Goblin spells, it looks like. We have a second wave for Dark Eldar coming out. We have the Beastmaster on a skyboard. Looks like a metal piece. I just convert my own myself. Succubus model. Looks pretty cool if you're into using the Succubus for leading your Dark Eldar into real-time raid things. We have the Chimera, which were kind of look like the old Fleshhounds that were in the last ones, but these ones have some tentacles and stuff. They Some parts look like they were mixed with Gene Stealers a little bit. We have the Clawed Fiend, which is a pretty neat little or big model. And we also have the Razorwing Flock, which I dig these guys. Paint job on them. Painter for Games Workshop did a good job. Let's see, we go into Black Library releases for this month. We have the Necromunda Omnibus, which is pretty cool. Probably end up picking this up. I haven't read any of these, so this would be a nice addition to my library. We have Blood Gorgons from Henry Zhu, Savage Scars from Andy Hoare, Broken Honor from Robert Earl, haven't heard of him yet, and Hammer of the Emperor. So we got that Forge World little thing. We got the Golden Demon approaches, and we go to a whole little things about that. And big major article is the orcs. That goes through the whole orcs and goblins. It focuses showing you more pictures of that cool ass spider. Showing you basically a whole savage orc army with some river trolls and also some black orcs in the back. It talks about the different units of goblins in the book. Of course, the giants making his reappearance into this. It's got nice little spider bits, breakdown of the spider, and it's got a little article of March of the Spider God. Now, this is called Arachnirach Spider. I don't believe that these are the complete point totals for this. I mean the complete options, because they don't give us it. But on the next page, there's like, look what we built in our Orcs and Goblin army. And they have the giant spider ringing in at 290 points. It doesn't show any upgrades or nothing. But we'll go over the rudimentary rules for the Arachnirach. It's got a movement 7, weapon skill 4, strength 5, toughness 6, 8 wounds, 4 initiative, 8 attacks. The forest goblins on back have a 2 weapon skill, 3 ballistic skill, 3 strength, 2 initiative, 1 attack with 6 leadership. Troop type is a monster with special rules of Force Strider, Immune Psychology, Large Target, Obstacle Strider, Stubborn, Stride, Terror, Wall Crawler, which isn't that really kind of like Obstacle Strider, but anyway, and Poison Attack, and this will be for the spider only. It goes on to talk about the holdout crew, always using everything, uses the spiders, the stuff. The spider is treated like a monster in all other respects. We'll hit, when shooting at a model, you know, roll a 1, 2, 4, Great Shaman, roll 5 or 6, normal. The spider's got a 4 plus natural armor, and it's got the Venom Surge. It uses a jolt of poison from its huge and venom fangs and kill more foldable opponents. Before rolling the hit, nominate one of the Arachnirach's attacks to be made with Venom Surge and roll it separately. In addition to being poisoned, this attack has multiple wounds, D6 special rule. They're not letting us know the rest of the goodness that the spider has, because I think for 290 points, we are lacking in rules. So we will wait until actually we go over the Orcs and Goblin army books before we get all excited about what the big spider has to offer. We got a army battle report, the Battle of Karak 8 Peaks. You're never going to guess who they got going against everything. It will be looking like Night Goblins, Skaven, and Dwarves. A couple special characters. Not really enthused with this. I'll read it later on this month, I'm sure, but I'm not going to go highly into it. But it does show a cool picture of the new Hellpit Abomination next to the spider. And it's going to definitely be, I believe, the Warhammer 8th edition. It's Clash of the Titan Monsters is what we're looking at, boys and girls. And now, the Hydra is small compared to these other beasts. Next up article, we have the Witch Cults of the Dark Eldar. And going through the different witch cults, you know, the Red Grieve, the Seventh Woe, the Bladed Denied, the little paint schemes and everything, if you want to get a little bit more in-depth in your painting on your Dark Eldar. We go into War of the Rings. Da Guldar Awakens. As you can see, this kind of reminds me of an old article they had in the past in the White Dwarf. Goes into Celeborn, Radagast the Brown, Theandrel, the Undying, the Castilians, Legolas, but in the War of the Rings scenario. Okay, not getting into that. But reason I did pick this up is just recently we've come to the release of the Stormraven. Now, I'm not 100% fan of some of the pictures I posted on my site before. And I will come out and say that as much bad press as this has gotten, I think that the Stormraven is a dandy little kit. I mean, it sure in the hell beats trying to put together something scratch-built, in my opinion. Especially if you want a squadron of three. I know they're not in squadrons, but you can have three Stormravens. And this is actually in the Grey Knights Codex. And matter of fact, the Stormraven box has one painted up like Grey Knights as it is. It goes into two army things, lists that they got coming up. One is a Strike Force Blood Creed, which is weighing in with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 Dreadnoughts, a large unit of Death Company, one tactical squad, one fast attack squad, running at 1,500 points. Very interesting. Definitely a Dreadnought heavy army. I like it. Next page over, for the same amount of points, minus 10, we have an army consisting of 3 Dreadnoughts, one tactical squad, with 2 tactical squads, an okay sized unit of Death Marines, 3 Dreadnoughts, and 2 Stormravens. I like this. I like the incorporation of the Stormraven into the army list. And of course, the White Dwarf is filled with nice pictures of Blood Angels' goodness. We got battle report of the with the Force of Spiders as a battle report. Well, obviously, one is about orcs and goblins, and once we get into the bottom, we kind of see that for 320 points, one of their spiders is running in with a flinger, which I'm assuming is a catapult or a mounted doom diver. I have no idea right now. And they will be facing off against the household of Coral Sun, which are dwarves, and the army of the Red Dragon, which are Bretonians. Goes in this lengthy battle report. Looks fun. Looks like fun to go over. I was told not to give winners and stuff, so I'm just going to miss to that. Next article goes up about using the Mighty Empires in 40K for the Battle Armageddon campaign scenario. We got a heavy metal article, which isn't really all that great with painting and stuff. It's got little tips to paint the Savage Orcs and stuff. And then we have, you know, this big old picture again of the main selling point for the new Orcs and Goblins, which will be this Arachnarak spider. We got a whole bunch of, like, different articles. We get to the end, and they show up some old Orc stuff, and coming next month at White Dwarf magazine sale, the 26th, Grey Knights. And the picture is pretty damn sweet. The large demon army. In the midst of it is 3 Storm Ravens painted up in Grey Knight heraldry and colors, bringing down all types of inquisitorial death. I like it. And that is pretty much the roundabout of the new White Dwarf. Of course, you can pretty much guess the feel for the White Dwarf by the cover. This has a big-ass orc on the front, and apparently it's going to be about orcs and goblins. Well, we will go ahead and take a break for a moment, and we'll come back, and I have an interview with James Swallow, and we'll finish up with a little bit of, you know, closing thoughts, and give you a little heads-up on what's coming on episode 47. All right, talk to you in a moment.
Cool City Games, Blue Water's most complete source for miniature wargaming and sports cards. Cool City Games offers a safe and friendly environment with free open gaming and up-to-date new releases, restocks, and hassle-free special orders. You can even put stuff in layaway. Cool City Games even offers box and case pricing on cards and collectible miniatures. Located in downtown Port Huron, that is in Michigan for all you out-of-towners, Jeff and Mike are available and ready to serve all your hobby needs. stop by at 724 Huron Avenue or visit on the web at www.coolcitygames.com.
Hey, I'm Luke.
And I'm JJ.
And we're the guys from World's End Radio. When we're not playing games...
or lying to our wives about it...
then we're going to the ends of the earth to bring you the latest content on all aspects of the Games Workshop hobby.
And a few other worlds besides.
So come find us at www.worldsendradio.com.
Or subscribe to the show through iTunes.
Of guest host at the imperialtruth.blogspot.com.
Well, as promised today, I have with me James Swallow, author of Nemesis, and of course, Fled to Eisenstein, as well as the audio dramas Geralt Oath Moment and upcoming audio drama based on that character as well. So, James, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, what can I say? I'm one of the lucky few chaps who is with a Black Library writing novels set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe and also in the Horus Heresy period. Aside from that, I'm a writer of a lot of other different things, a lot of tie novels, working on different franchises, stuff like Star Trek, Doctor Who, Stargate SG-1, that kind of thing. I've also worked in video games and written radio dramas. I guess I'm just a writer of stuff, and I'm lucky enough to say that 40K and Horus Heresy are right at the top of the pile of that stuff.
The writer of stuff. I like that. I like that. How long have you been writing for the Black Library?
Wow. Gee, it must be something like about 4 or 5 years now. I think it was maybe... you know, I'd have to go back and look, but I think it's around about 2006.
Okay.
Was when I first started writing for them. The first thing I did was a short story for Inferno, which was the comics and short fiction magazine.
Yeah.
That was sadly no longer with us. And I did, my first story was a Space Marine story featuring the Doom Eagles.
Okay.
And you know, had a great time doing that. And I did a couple of stories of the Doom Eagles, and the guys at Black Library liked it so much that they said to me, "Well, we'd like you to come on board and start writing a Space Marine story." So I looked around at the different chapters that had been written about, and of course, most of the really cool first founding chapters had already had novel series done about them, and I couldn't believe that nobody had picked up the Blood Angels because I thought they were just so cool. So I went to the editors and I said, "I'd like to do the Blood Angels." And they said, "Well, we'd like you to do the Blood Angels." And away we went.
Just so happy to be, we have the book for you. So out of everything that you've written for the Black Library, what happens to be your favorite Black Library book that you've written?
See, asking me that question, that's like kind of saying to a parent, which is your favorite child, you know? Because I love them all in different ways for different reasons. You know, so it's difficult for me to just say, "Oh, this is the best one I've ever done." You know, every time I write something, there's always something about it where I think, "Oh, this is the thing that made this story or this piece really work very, very well." And you know, conversely as well, you'll always look at something and go, "Oh, maybe I could have done that better." You know, because we writers tend to be our kind of worst critics, really. So I can't really narrow it down to just one thing. I mean, I always like to say that the best thing I've ever written will be the next thing.
Okay.
But I haven't written that yet, so who knows?
You guys at the Black Library get together and you just evade these questions, like, all in the same way. I like that.
Oh, I'm not trying to be evasive, you know. Honestly,
I know, I just think it's funny.
Really is true. I mean, you know, it's I'm so lucky to have a job that I really love, to do something that I really care about. And I really do, you know, care an awful lot about my work. And the Warhammer universe is something that I'm a fan of, and... you know, I'm interested in it as not just as a creative person, but as somebody who just thinks it's really cool, you know. I mean, I get sent a box of Warhammer and Warhammer 40,000 novels every month, and I'm lucky because we get, like, because we're on staff, we get like an advance box. So it comes out maybe like a month before everybody else gets them, which is really cool. And it's like Christmas every time it happens. I'm like, oh, cool, new book day. What have we got? You know, and I open the box and it's like, oh, there's a new Dan novel. There's something that Aaron's written, or there's this, or there's that. Here's a new audio drama or something. And it's really great. And I look at all these things and think, wow, you know, how am I going to find time in the day to read all of these great things? So it's really fun to be part of that.
How do you have time to read all those? That's all I got to say.
Well, I read pretty quickly, actually. I mean, I tend to read maybe... on, you know, in a good month, I'll read maybe sort of like two or three novels.
Oh, okay.
Try and squeeze them all in, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I have a massive pile of stuff to read right now. My to-read pile of books, it's not just sort of Warhammer stuff. I mean, it's lots of other stuff as well. It's about, I'd say, 90-odd books at least.
Gotcha. Now,
I mean, I just go on to... Actually, today is World Book Day, you know, as we're talking. I was promoting this earlier on my Twitter feed. You know, World Book Day is a great thing, great opportunity for people to sit down and read books or... you know, buy books, and this morning I was just thinking about that, and there was a knock on my door, and it was a delivery man with another book, and I thought, that's great! Yeah, more stuff for me to read.
That's good. Now, other than yourself, of course, do you have an author from the Black Library that you'd like to read more than others?
Now, see, now you ask me that question, if I say anybody's name, I'm going to get in trouble with the other guys.
See, I made them all answer this.
See, that's really cool, man, because if I say, like, oh, I think Dan is the best, then, like, Graham and Aaron are going to go, what, so you don't like us, though? Well, thanks, man. And, you know...
That's the perfect answer, though.
See, if I say that, that's going to, like, you know, Aaron, you know, I'll make Aaron cry, and nobody likes to see that happen, and Graham will come to my house and sort of, like, you know, with a bicycle. Oh, you like my book? I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, it's great to be working in a team of talented individuals like the guys that we have working at Black Library and the girls as well, because we're bringing on board some female writers now as well. I think everybody working at the Black Library brings a different voice to it. So I wouldn't say I prefer the work of one writer over another. I think it's more true to say that depending on what kind of story you want to read, depends on, you know, on a given day, depends on what kind of writer you would find would be best fit for you. That, you know, like Aaron does these great stories that have a sort of brooding, powerful intensity to them. Graham's stuff is really sort of hardcore and grinding action adventure. Dan has a fantastic take on, you know, the kind of the realities of war and the nature of great human characters, you know, and I guess it depends on what flavor you want that day. Do you want chocolate or vanilla? Do you want Dan or do you want Graham? You know, yeah, they all have their own appeals, I guess.
That is true. I'm not going to ask you which one's chocolate. So you mentioned working with all the different people at the Black Library. How do you like the cohesion you have working on the Horus Heresy series?
It's a lot of fun. You know, it's very different from what's happened with the previous Black Library books, because stuff's been written kind of, not exactly in isolation, but, you know, you've got, say, you know, one guy over here doing his stuff. So Dan's maybe, like, writing his Gaunt's Ghosts book. We've got Sandy Mitchell's doing his Caius Kane stuff. You've got me writing my Blood Angels books. Maybe, you know, Gav Thorpe's doing a Dark Angels novel. Graham's doing the Ultramarines. But we don't tend to have an awful lot of crossover. But with the Horus Heresy series, because it's one series but multiple authors, you know, we realized from the get-go that we had to make sure that everybody was kind of on the same page, that we all understood the way the story was gonna shake out. And I think it's really, really paid a lot of dividends, because we just sit in a room and we say, okay, you know, we have this meeting maybe once every sort of 6 months, and we talk about where we are and where we're going and what stories we want to cover. And it's just fantastic to be in a room with a bunch of interesting, creative people and say, well, I've got this idea. Really? Well, have you thought about doing it this way? Or maybe you could do it that way. And, you know, guys chuck different ideas in, and before you know it, you've got this fantastic kind of synergy going, and ideas just emerge out of this kind of creative flux. Stuff that, you know, at the beginning of the day, you go in there and go, okay, I've got two ideas. You come out, you've got 20. Because ideas you never thought you would have come out of the story, come out of the meeting and the mix, that are just sort of spontaneously formed. And that is really exciting to be a part of that, because you just see creativity happening in front of you. It's just amazing.
Wow, that's a good... You talk about having a good job. That's definitely going to be a fun job as well.
It certainly is, yeah. Yeah. If anything, you know, we have to kind of rein ourselves in a little bit, because sometimes we're like, oh, we could do this! This would be so cool! Let's do this thing! I think when it works best is one of those moments where someone will say something that is pretty awesome, and the rest of us will just go silent for a second and kind of think, wow. and that's when you know you've got a good idea, when nobody else says anything, and then maybe one person will pipe up, man, that's cool, let's do that. And it's like, okay, write that down. Yeah, I'm going to do that story.
Yeah, I got a cool idea for today.
Yeah. It is, you know, we're I would say unashamedly, we are like kids with a fantastic toy box. You know, we've got this great story, we've got this great world to tell stories in, and we've got these key story elements that, you know, the bits of the Horus Heresy that you know about, and there are great big bits of the Horus Heresy that are just blank canvases, and we say, well, where are we gonna take this piece? You know, what story are we gonna tell here? How are we gonna join all these things up? And it's a great challenge, because obviously this is the crown jewels of the Warhammer 40,000 world. You know, this is the core baseline myth of Warhammer. So we have to treat it with respect, and we have to treat it well. We have to make it exciting and thrilling, but we also have to try and open it up a little bit, because, you know, you know the basic story of what happens with the Heresy. You know how it's going to play out. You know how the ending's going to happen, but we have to try and tell you how you get there in an interesting way and show you new things and maybe say, well, you know, you thought it went out like this, but actually it kind of happened like that. And, you know, you never knew about this bit of the story, so here's a little more of that, and you see it in a different way, and we kind of grow the concept a little, I guess.
Definitely, and you can see that in a lot of your writings as well as the other authors. And that gives us to the next question. After such a book, great book, as The Flight of Eisenstein, I think that's one of the most pivotal books in the Horus Heresy series so far. You went from there and you've expanded with the character Garrow in your audio drama series. How did he come about, and, you know, what is your personal opinions on the actual audio dramas rather than the actual, you know, black and white novelizations?
Okay. Well, Garrow was a great character. I mean, Flight of the Eisenstein is pretty much just about that one man. You know, he's a fantastic character, and he's got a lot of really interesting light and shade to him. And so when I finished writing Flight of the Eisenstein, I was really enthusiastic about the way the character had shaken out. And a lot of people came to me and said, you know, we really liked what happened to Garrow. Are we going to see more stories about him? You know, where did he go next? And I hadn't planned at the time to say, well, okay, this is what Garrow does.
Okay.
You know, we laid in a few sort of things right at the very end, a kind of couple of hints about where he might go next. But there were no sort of hard and fast plans. Okay, the next Garrow story will be this and then this and then this. And so high, and people were saying, you know, please bring Garrow back. Let's see more stories about him. And we were trying to find a way to do it in an interesting and slightly different way. So instead of maybe just saying, okay, we're going to just write another novel about him, let's try and tell a different kind of story. Let's do something that you know, will take the Horus Heresy franchise in a different direction, or just a different way of telling the story. And I am a big fan of audio drama storytelling. Yeah, I've worked on different kinds of radio dramas. I've worked on audio versions of a lot of different sort of franchises and shows, stuff like Stargate and Doctor Who and Space 1889 and a lot of other projects. And I really like it as a way to tell stories. I think you can tell a story with audio or radio in a way that you can never tell a story with a book, because it's a very intimate medium. You know, the story is literally speaking just to you, and you have this story unfolding in your head. You know, if you sit with headphones, you know, and in a quiet corner, sit there with, you know, a cup of coffee and just like kind of lose yourself in the story. I think it's a brilliant way of telling stories. And of course, you have the best special effects budget in the world, which is the imagination of your reader. So, you know, the story, as long as you get the sound effect working right, and you get an actor who really understands the material and kind of sells the drama of it, I think it's a fantastic way to tell stories. So to me, taking that and taking kind of the ongoing story of Nathaniel Garrow, that kind of just dovetailed together really well. And we worked with a voice actor, a guy called Toby Longworth, who I've worked on a bunch of other dramas and stories. he knows Warhammer, and he knew exactly what I was saying when I said to him, look, I want you to play this kind of character. And he said, yep, I know exactly what you want. I know how to do that. And he came in and he put a really powerful kind of performance energy on it. And at the end of the day, I was really, really happy with it. And so it gave us a chance to pick up Garrow's story. So we have these two audio dramas. The first one is called Oath of Moment.
Yeah.
And that picks up a little while after the events of Flight of the Eisenstein. And it involves, I'm not going to give away too much, but it involves Garrow taking part on a secret mission. And the second story takes place quite a long time after that, about, I think it's about a year or so later, you know, further down the line of the heresy. And that one is called Legion of One. And that I can't say anything about because it has quite a big twist in it. And it's going to be interesting to see what people think when they hear that one.
Good, good. Let's see, are all of Garrow's stories going to be on audio dramas, or are we going to get a kick-ass 800-page book about them?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, beyond this point, I have some rough ideas about where I'd like to take him. I think really what it is, it's kind of down to the guys at Black Library in charge. You know, if they say to me, you know, the audios have done very, very well, please do more, then maybe we will do more stories. If they say we want to do a big, you know, kick a page book, then maybe that will be where we go. I think it's as much down to the editors and the audience as well. If people enjoy these kind of stories, we're going to tell more of them.
Okay. Next up, we have a question from a listener, actually.
Okay.
Let's see. Did you create Garrow yourself, or was he already a character already in the 40K universe?
No, he was an existing character. Garrow is listed in one of the early versions of the storyline of the Flight of the Eisenstein. If you go back in the early Warhammer source books, there's about four or five different versions of the Flight of the Eisenstein story, all kind of told in slightly different ways. And some of them, Garrow's not even in them. Other ones, Garrow's in one position, and other ones, Garrow's doing something else. And what I tried to do when I was writing Flight of the Eisenstein is I looked at all of those stories and I drew one thing from each of those stories to kind of say, well, none of these things are completely wrong, none of these things are completely true, but this is what really happened. So kind of Flight of the Eisenstein is like, I looked at that, this is the definitive version of that story. This is what actually happened if you had been there. So Garrow was a character existing in the background of the heresy, but what I tried to do was just basically kind of open him out a little bit more. And, you know, bring him to life, I guess.
Excellent. Second part of the question itself is, how does it feel to write about someone who makes Eisenhorn look like a little girl?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, I think, you know, Gregor Eisenhorn is a great character. I mean, brilliant piece of work there by my pal Dan. I think he's a fantastic character. and I'm pleased that that people think that Nathaniel Garrow is hardcore, because that's exactly the way I wanted to write him. I mean, he's a strong, you know, he's this straight arrow Garrow, that's what they call him. You know, he's that kind of character. He has a very challenging story that, you know, this road that he travels in Flight of the Eisenstein, he goes from being a man to being a completely different kind of man by the end of it. You know, he has this spiritual experience that changes his entire outlook on the universe, you know, and the direction that things are going to go for him. And I think that is very, very powerful for anybody who's ever been in any situation, you know, even in an ordinary everyday situation where something happens to you and you kind of step back and go, wow, am I doing the right thing with my life? And I hope that people will kind of recognize that. This is, you know, he's a space marine and this is a space opera and this is starships and stuff blowing up and all that kind of thing. But maybe at the core of it, there is a theme that maybe people, ordinary people like us, can kind of say, okay, that kind of reflects my life in a way.
Yeah, it definitely was a compassionate character in the Flight of the Eisenstein.
Yeah, I really wanted to try and make him, you know, as you say, a compassionate person. I didn't want him to be, you know, space marine, daka daka, raw, you know, because you can find yourself writing these guys as just nothing but killing machines. And on some level, that's exactly what they are. I think it's more interesting to explore what there is of humanity in these guys as well, because it's an interesting situation to be in. Is on the one hand, you can be this, you know, armor-plated, genetically engineered superhuman, and on the other hand, you're still a human being in this somewhere. What's it like being those two things at once?
And definitely, and you can tell that in the Flight of Eisenstein. I forgot
the name of the Dreadnought character who was alive during at the end of the virus bombing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Hiram Fowl, yeah.
Yeah, and you could definitely tell, I mean, this Dreadnought had this, like, level of humanity about him just in your writing and stuff. I mean, good job.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's fun, though, isn't it, when you think about it? Here's a guy who's just basically kind of a few chunks of meat inside a big armored power suit, and yet, you know, he's a human character, and I thought, if you were that sort of person, if you'd lost so much of what made you a human being, you'd either go one of two directions. You'd either become more mechanical, or maybe you'd become more human because you want to strive to hold on to what little bit of humanity you still had. And I think that's kind of what Huron Fowl was, is that, you know, even though he is basically a tank on legs, he's still a man in this somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Now I got two more questions for you, and I will let you go for today.
Okay.
Okay, first one is also from a listener. Is there any way you could pull any strings you can so you could be writing the Blood Angels Heresy book?
I don't have to pull any strings at all. That is going to happen.
Awesome. That will make somebody happy out there.
That has been the plan for very... Let me tell you, from the very first Horus Heresy meeting we had, I remember this very clearly. We went up to Black Library headquarters in Nottingham. And we all sat down and they said, right, okay, we are going to do the Horus Heresy. And we were all like, wow, this is going to be super awesome. You know, it's going to be so much fun to do this. And we were talking about all the big things that happened in the Heresy, all the events that we knew about. And we were saying, okay, well, you know, obviously we've got the Dropsite Massacre, we've got the, you know, Olympia, we've got the Raising of Prospero, Calph. And then someone said, then we've got Cygnus Prime with the Blood Angels. And I raised my hand and I said, no one touches that but me. I said I'm going to put my hand up and say I want to do Cygnus Prime. I want to put a fence around that with Jim written on it. So I said, I want to do that. Does anybody, and nobody else in the room, you know, said no. They were all like, kind of, yeah, you know what, you've done great work with the Blood Angels in the 40K universe. Try and, you know, take on the Blood Angels in the Horus Heresy time period. So it's been a while coming because we've had to sort of wait until the line gets to a position where we can tell that story.
Yeah.
But I've been developing the outline for the Cygnus Prime Blood Angels novel for about a year and a half now. And, you know, we've been going backwards and forwards and putting stuff in and taking stuff out. And we just had a meeting about 2 or 3 weeks ago, our last Horus Heresy meeting. And I was there and I brought the most recent version of the outline to the guys. And I said, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And Dan was talking to me about some of the work that he'd done in Prospero Burns. And he said, look, I did this in Prospero Burns, so maybe we could do this. And I said, yeah, that'll work if I take a little bit of that and I put this in here. And Graham put some comments in and Gav Thorpe put some other comments in. And it was, you know, part of that collaborative experience I was talking about beforehand, you know, getting together. And I'm kind of turning up and saying, this is what I'm thinking of doing, guys. What do you guys think? And they're like, oh, that's great. Well, have you tried it this way? You know, and so it's almost like everybody has a little bit of a hand in everybody else's book.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a real team effort. It's almost like, I think in a lot of ways, it's like working on a TV series. Because if you look at the way that most television shows are made, certainly in the United States, is you have what they call the writer's room. And you have like one guy comes in and goes, okay, this is my script for this episode of this show. And all the other guys in the room say, okay, well, let's have a look at it, and let's collaborate, and let's see how we can make it better. And that's exactly what we're doing with the Horus Heresy novels. So the Blood Angels story is going to tell the story of the battle for Cygnus Prime,
okay,
which is basically the Blood Angels turning up. Horus sends the Blood Angels to the Cygnus system and says, well, you know, I need you to go out here and sort this out because there's some stuff going on. I think there's some aliens. And Sanguinius says, sure, Horus, you know, because I trust you and you're my brother and you would never, right, you'd never screw me over, right? Sure, man. And Horus is like, yeah, man, no problem. Off you go. And of course, you know, he's lying to him. And it's this terrible ambush when they get here. The entire system is being ruled by massed amounts of demons. And this is the first time in the Horus Heresy where demon warfare is literally, you know, not just maybe one or two demons hiding in the shadows, but armies of them, you know, massive, monstrous forces of creatures, you know, just piling over the landscape. So it's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff blowing up, a lot of bolt of fire, a lot of action, and a lot of ground warfare, and some new stuff. I think in a lot of ways it's going to change the nature of where the Heresy is. It's going to be a turning point for these characters. And it's going to put the Blood Angels kind of front and center for the next stage of the heresy. Because we're reaching what we call the Age of Darkness, which is the period of the Horus Heresy where the existing storylines, you know, the stuff that's in the source books and the role-playing rule books and everything, there's not a lot of detail about this period. And, you know, we have some ideas about what's going to take place in that period. And let me tell you guys, it will blow your mind.
It's a ways away, isn't it?
Well, let's see, where are we now? The most recent heresy book was Prospero Burns. That is going to be followed by a short story collection, which is called Age of Darkness. I have a story in that, which is called Liar's Dew. And that's got some very, very good stories in it. And then beyond that, we have The Outcast Dead, which is being written by Graham McNeil. And that is a very cool story, mostly set on Terra, to do with a astropath who finds out something that he shouldn't. And that's got some very, very interesting things going on. I would say more than that. And then beyond that point, we have a few more books kind of that we're specking out, and we're talking about where we're going to put them in the schedule. None of those have been announced yet, so I won't say any more. But we certainly have plans for at least another couple of years' worth of Horus Heresy novels.
Good.
we're not done yet, not by a long way.
They have been very enjoyable. Now, the last question I have is, outside of the Horus Heresy stuff that we just went through, what do we have to look forward from James Swallow in the future?
Well, I am actually right this minute currently working on a new Sisters of Battle novel.
Okay.
Back in, I think it was 2007, 2008, I did
Faith and Fire,
which was the very first kind of Sisters of Battle only novel. Which, funny thing was, is that at the time it was a bit of a hard sell for me, because when I went to the guys at Black Library, I said, I'd like to do a Sisters of Battle novel. And they said, well, we're not really sure if that would work, because it is, you know, it's generally pretty much an entirely female cast, and we're not sure if our readership would be interested in that. And I said, well, it's nuns with guns, you know. What's not to like? You know, and they came around, they really liked the idea of it, and so that was Faith and Fire. And it was funny as well, because after I wrote the book, when people were coming up to me to ask me to sign it was usually two kinds of people. It was either female fans who were saying, thank you so much for writing a book with strong female characters in the lead as opposed to just kind of supporting characters. Or it was guys who were saying, I bought this book for my girlfriend because I wanted to show her that Warhammer isn't just kind of, you know, hugely muscled men. It's also kind of kick-ass girls as well. And, I mean, who doesn't like a strong, dynamic female character?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Warhammer universe has got room for both of those things, boys and girls. So I've been saying for a while I'd like to go back and tell another story with those characters. And so the opportunity has come up. So what we're doing this year is I have written an audio drama story called Red and Black, and that is an hour-long audio, and that's a prequel to Faith and Fire.
Okay.
So I think that's coming out in October. And then Faith and Fire will come out again. That will be reprinted because it's been out of print for quite a while. And Faith and Fire will come back, I think that's going to be in November or December. And also in December, we'll have the next novel in the series, which is the one I'm working on right now, which is called Hammer and Anvil. And that's going to be basically the Sisters of Battle fighting the Necrons.
Oh, cool. Necrons, they need some love.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be some cool Necron stuff coming up in that, definitely.
Well, I'm going to let you get ahead with your day, and I'm going to give you a very big thank you very much for doing this interview today.
Well, you know, I'm glad to do it. I'm glad we managed to get it sorted out in the end.
Yeah, well, it's all, we just got to pray to the Skype gods, apparently.
That's right, yes. It's like with the Adeptus Mechanicus, you know, we have to anoint and pray to the Omnissiah that our computers will work properly.
That, I didn't have my incense going. That's exactly what happened to
it. There you go, man. You see it work.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. Look forward to hearing the final thing. Bye-bye, man.
All right, bye.
Hopefully, everyone enjoyed that. It was a quite pleasant interview, and it almost didn't happen. As you can imagine from the end of the interview, the machine god was very fickle that day. James had a problem with his Skype in his computer, and I had a problem with mine as well. The minute I did finally get a hold of him, but we made it work, and I think the interview turned out quite well. Let me know what you think. Up next, not in today's episode, but coming up, we're going to go over Malifaux again. Now, I'm kind of torn whether or not I should focus on the Resurrectionist or the Arcanist next, so what we'll be focusing on. You got any ideas, comments, or suggestions, you can send them to SeanHammer, the number 9 at yahoo.com. Please send them. I mean, a lot of the questions sent me to me today, I used for this interview with James Swallow, and they were very, very nice questions, and they went really well into the interview. So, I mean, it definitely pays to basically go ahead and, just go ahead and give me your input. I'll use it. And I do like hearing from you guys and girls. If you got any suggestions or comments, please send them to SeanHammer, the number 9 at yahoo.com. Please leave iTunes reviews. I mean, those are very helpful. I like receiving them, and we'll go from there. I am taking ideas for upcoming shows, as well as for what I'll be doing in the Malifaux next. And I think that pretty much call it quits for today. I would like to give a big shout out and a thank you to Andrew Teeple. Hopefully I pronounce that correctly, if that's how I pronounce it. Good. If not, I'm very sorry. You can go ahead and bitch me out if you want. And hopefully you guys continue to enjoy, and we've got more interviews coming up in the future. Still got that one with Aaron Dembski Bolden happening up. Trying to get one with Sandy Mitchell, author of the Sifis Kane novels. And we'll go from there, and hopefully, more great things come in the future. And also, up next, we got some next episode, some major coverage of my Insane Warhammer weekend. So until next time, remember, if you're not having fun, stop playing the game.
A company always on the run, a destiny, oh, it's the rising sun. I was born a shotgun in my hands, behind the gun I'll make my final stand. Is all
That's why they call me.